They don't clap that long at medical conferences. They just yawn. Can I have a... Is this sound check okay? Okay. Well, we're here to talk today about creation evolution. And it's a worldview. It's based on assumptions. We have an assumption based on the Bible and the scriptural truth. And the materialists have an assumption based on their beliefs. Scientists are heavy into slides and graphs. And that's unfortunate for you, but we love... How many science majors in here? Got science majors? Ooh, not so good. Not so good. Not so good. There are going to be some hairy slides. I'll warn the liberal arts people, cover their eyes, okay? All right. Now, this is going to be casual. The point of this lecture, you are not going to remember everything I'm telling you. You probably had Bio 101, or if not, you're going to have it to get out of college. And you're going to have a goofball like me up there teaching you about evolution, okay? And what are you going to answer him? What are you going to say to him? Sit back there and go, well, my Bible says it's not true. And he's going to trash the Bible, trust me. His ultimate goal is to trash the Word of God. And I'm going to give you some evidence and some tools today that makes that totally impossible, okay? So let's start out with slide number one. And science kind of guys are spazzy and they kind of knock things over, so just tolerate me. This is not a polished presentation. See, at a medical conference, you just hum and haw and show another graph if you don't know the guy's answer. And see, that authenticates my ability. See, slides up. Isn't this cheesy looking? That is not high class. But we have better ones. Okay. First of all, they tell you to cover everything up that you're not going to talk about so your minds won't wander, but that's going to start in about 2 or 3 minutes. Anyway, you know, I was in the military, and before he did an exercise, a big joke, he said, look at the man at the right of you, or lady to the right of you, look at the man to the left of you. And he said, in an hour, one of you be dead, okay? So I want you to look, the man to the left of you, or lady to the left of you, the man to the right of you, in half an hour, one of you will be dead asleep, okay? All right, now, essentially two opposing views. One we get from our Bible, which is theological and supernatural. The other one comes from materialism. Now, I don't care how you slice it. I don't care how you put sugar coating on it, theistic evolution, whatever you want to do, they come from a purely materialistic point of view. Don't ever, ever get confused when you're discussing creation evolution and think it's not a spiritual question. When I take my dog to the veterinarian after the first visit, the second time he drags his feet, he knows where he's going. Do you understand? That's exactly what happens when you start discussing creation evolution with somebody. They know ultimately where that argument's going to end up. When you study the philosophy of science, it's quite difficult. There are guys that get PhDs. That's a couple degrees above bachelor's degrees, because I know you're working for yours. That go round and round what constitutes a scientific theory. What you're going to get in your basic biology book is something, a turn the crank, here's what science is. Don't believe it. Science is a confusing endeavor, and we're going to talk about theories and ways they arrive at theories and structures of theories. Scientific, that's supposed to be in red. Get a color shift. Okay, scientific hypothesis is formulated entirely on materialism. So when someone approaches you with hypotheses for evolution, remember, they can sugarcoat it and say, well, if you want to believe in deistic evolution and whatever. Now, that's sugarcoating. The pill inside, the active ingredient, is an atheistic, God is not involved, no supernatural involvement needed. Don't be fooled. Now, I'm going to uncover the whole slide. Hang on. Okay. Noted resistance to... We have some real talented people in the Christian community, PhDs, dual PhDs, doing work on design inference. One of them is David Meyer. The other is a fellow by the name of Dembski. He got his PhD at University of Chicago, and another one at University of Illinois, I believe. Both in one in mathematics, one in philosophy. The guy's really bright. He is starting to work on equations to show that there is a design inference in the universe. Uh-oh. Evolutionists don't like it. Why? Why don't they like it? Anything that leads to other than strictly materialistic gets negated. Do you understand what we're talking about? Number two, probability formulations. I debated a guy in a state university, and when this guy was a professor of philosophy, but he kind of hung around with the scientists, he stood up and said to me, "You, Dr. Moeller, don't understand probability." And I said, "Well, help me out." He said, "Well, you know, we're all here tonight, so that means we're here. What's the probability of that?" And I said, "Well, let's go beyond that. Georgia has a lottery, $30 million. Who's going to win tomorrow?" "Don't know, do you?" "Well, I understand probability. What happens with probability formulations? What's the number of total electrons in the universe?" "Okay, 10 to the 80th. Take a 10, 80 zeros. I don't know how they got that number, but I've seen it. Pretty impossible to imagine. The probability of us evolving is one anywhere from the 231th power to 43,000. That's in secular literature. Doesn't matter. Why? We're here. God didn't do it. And that's materialism. Do you understand? You're not going to appeal to people through a design argument, even though they're formulated by accredited PhDs, airtight mathematics. They're not going to buy it. Any future models which presuppose, is that in focus? My eyes are bad. There it is. Other than strict materialism is going to fail. So don't waste your time. Creation evolution is what? Spiritual question. Nature of scientific models. Now, what is the definition of a scientific model? You can read books. You can get a PhD on modeling scientific hypotheses, and I'm not going to beat you up with that. We're going to take a couple that are very legitimate. Present a falsifiable hypothesis. Now, that's what a scientific hypothesis has to do. Getting ready for this lecture, I was thinking, how can I explain this to non-science majors? And one is, let's take the idea that I thought the moon was made of green cheese. Okay? Might be. Well, pretend we're in 1950. Why? Because we've been there. But we've been to the moon. Suppose you had an idea the moon is made of green cheese. Now, how are we going to investigate that? You have a model, a hypothesis. It doesn't matter where you got it. Kekulé in organic chemistry woke up, watched a fire in kind of a dream, and saw snakes chasing each other's tail. That's how I got the idea for the benzene ring in organic chemistry. Guess what? They found out that that is a true hypothesis. However, how did he get it? Well, watching the fireplace, kind of, I don't know, having a beer. I don't know, but the hypothesis is true. So whatever you want to believe in science, let's put it to the test. The moon is made of green cheese. Number one, you say, we can't get there, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take green cheese and I'm going to reflect light on it, on our planet, sunlight, and I'm going to see what radiates. Then I'm going to get a spectrophotometer on Earth. I'm going to measure the gaseous atmosphere coming off the moon, see what happens. Guess what? No green cheese. So I said, okay, I'm going to get a radar set. I'm going to bounce radar on the Earth off the green cheese, get a reading, and I'm going to bounce radar off the moon. Guess what? It's not made of green cheese. What's the next step? Have I still proved the moon is not made of green cheese? No. I haven't verified it, but I haven't disproved it. I could come up, if I really thought that was a good theory, because Mars is made of green cheese and Venus is made of green cheese, I could say, well, it's covered with a big rock shell that my radar's bouncing off of and the green cheese won't emanate. You see how we're developing a theory? So I get federal funding, I get a lunar rover, go up, starts digging on the surface of the Earth. Guess what? No green cheese. Has my hypothesis still been falsified? How many say yes? No, it's still no. Let's say I fund a huge project, send the man and the moon up there, I drill a hole all the way through the moon with a big core sample and pull it back, no green cheese. Now my hypothesis is falsified. Do you all understand what I said? Okay. Now, creation comes into interaction with reality. Bang. Where? Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The materialists say, what would Carl Sagan say if he was here today with us? If there was a beginning, the great magnetic contraction and pulsating, okay, that is a hypothesis based on nothing. It's a materialist hypothesis. So now do you understand how we're starting to frame frameworks? When someone wants to teach you about evolution and a materialistic universe, you have to understand that it is totally hypothetical. Do you see where we're coming from? Now, in science classes, it's kind of like you all worked, you walked in here today. It's a Christian worldview conference. Is that correct? So if I started saying, well, thanks for inviting me, Pete, but I guess you didn't know I'm a Buddhist now. And so I'd kind of like to just drift off into a little bit of what Buddhism's done for my life, okay? I think Pete would come up here, wrestle me off the platform, and go, we're on conference. Okay, but I'm from California, so I can do weird things. All right. Now, the next slide is even nicer. What happened from a historic... Good grief. We don't have enough time to do this lecture. I've got 250 slides. It's really pathetic. My daughter begged me to stop. You know, she's kind of a liberal arts kid. They're going to be swamped. Okay. But it's more important that you take home tools, okay? I have all the technical information. I've got right and left-handed amino acid pictures, the origin of life experiments, molecules, equilibrium constants. Oh, you will love this, okay? But we're not going to get into that right now. We still have 3 hours and 40 minutes remaining. Okay, what happened? Why the big grind? What's come off? Take us back 100, 150 years ago. What's going on in Europe? Industrialization, correct? Mankind is freed from the farm. Steam, I love steam. Railroads, oh yeah. Now, how does that apply to anything? Number one, they started digging. They actually started with the English canals, but they started digging through to get trains through mountains. What did they find? Shells, animals they hadn't seen before. Then they also started to work with metallurgy, started to work with advanced mathematics, Newton finished calculus, engineering principles, machine tool industry. Now we have trains. This is only about 150 years ago. Okay. Now, physics, nature of the atom. By 1900, let's talk about Clerk Maxwell, a Christian guy, electromagnetic theory, Faraday, Coulomb, all these great scientists around between 1850 and 1900. They are really digging into the nature of the world and how it operates. By, let's say, 1903, 1885, 1889, Rutherford, Curie, and Rankin were working on subatomic particles. So they are really taking this world apart. Great. Mendel came up with genetics around 1860 to 1890, something like that. I'm not a history major, okay? What were our good buddies doing in the liberal seminaries to help this whole situation out? What man does best. The Bible isn't true. How about that? So let's work overtime, get public funding for being a theologian and wreck the gospel train. Okay. So they're working overtime on that. Kierkegaard, nope. History guy, help me out. Who's back there? Heidegger, Haydn, I don't know, some German guy. Now, along comes Charlie Darwin. Did Charlie Darwin have a great theory? No, he did not. He did not have that particularly great theory. First of all, mark my words, no one has received a Nobel Prize in evolutionary theory. T. Hunt Morgan, genetics, and some of this other stuff. Never in strict evolutionary theory. If the theory is so great, how come there have been no Nobel Prizes? Got me. All right. Charlie Darwin comes along. He rips off ideas from Erasmus Darwin, who was his great-grandfather, and Wallace. Kind of goes on a voyage. Uh-oh, he was a minister. Don't worry about it. Writes a little book, Origin of Species, and comes up with a great idea. We came, well, essentially, he didn't say it, but inferred it, slime mold. Well, guess what? Europe now has Industrial Revolution. Follow that list on down. We do not need God. And, of course, the theologians march right up and say, you're right. The Bible is nothing but a story, a list of happy thoughts. Now what happens? Where does it say next? The end of the idea of absolutes. Last night, one of the speakers talked about the end of absolutes. We can no longer appeal to absolutes. Sure, you can, but if they yawn and say, I'm going to go, just go off and take a hike, it's not much you can do. Do you understand what we're talking about? Is everybody with me? You get a slow slide into a non-absolute referent ditch. God is dead. We can run our own world. What did I write down here? Philosophic caveat. Oh, some of this stuff probably doesn't even spell right. You guys are liberal arts, you scare me, you know. I thought coming was spelled with two M's, Wednesday. I didn't even know Wednesday had an N in it until my second year of college. Who says Wednesday, you know? Happy Wednesday, you know? I'm serious. Or February, January. January, February. If you're English majors, liberal arts, I want to hear it. February, okay. No, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. You people torture science people, so here it comes right back. You're laughing. I'm going to hurt you. The assumption that the universe is governed by laws and is able to be interpreted by our human minds is not provable, okay? C.S. Lewis said, I have a big problem. He became a Christian at 40. He was a professor at Oxford, Cambridge. They're all the same to the science guy. At any rate, Renaissance literature, I believe. He said to a scientist in evolution, he said, you tell me the world is made of random molecules and random motion, correct?
Yes.
Well, how can I trust my brain if my brain is made of neurons with random molecules and random motion? How do you know any good thought can come from that? As a matter of fact, that guy E.L. Moskal in Philosophy of Science turned around and said, if that's true, that everything's in random motion, molecules in random motion, wake up, just kidding. molecules in random motion, how do I know that the thought that the world is made of molecules in random motion is true? Do you understand that? So sometimes somebody comes up and says, there are no absolutes except the absolute, that there's no absolutes. How many of you all heard of Ravi Zacharias? Good. How many don't have hands? Okay. All right. If you're here today, raise your hand. Okay. Now, Ravi Zacharias is a philosopher. He's an excellent apologetics person for the conservative fundamental. I hate that word fundamentalist because it's been trashed. But we'll call it covenant family. Okay. Now we're going to get into some of the uglier slides. Y'all cover your eyes and... And see, I went through, this should be upright. This is pathetic. No, don't groan yet. We haven't had any chemicals up here. All right. What I want to do is teach you about how to interpret things. You see, if I'm talking to a bunch of science guys, and you're all engineering guys, I'm going to go right to the meat. I'm going to flip up. I'm going to talk to you about racemates. I'm going to talk to you about energy of bonding, equilibrium reactions. We can do that. We're going to show you what that looks like. Maybe we won't get to it today, but some other... Creationists are not afraid to talk about details. You want to know about RNA world, how cytosine does not form precipitates in the early oceans? We'll talk about it. We'll talk about paleomagnetism. Creationists have the best model of the age of our world. So, at any rate, what does this tell you? Preconceived ideas about origins, is that true? Next time a guy gets up, talks about evolution? Preconceived idea. We're not going to talk about the data. We're going to use the same data. I think, what's this, the plural? Data? I don't know. The plural of data is a lot of data, I guess. I don't know. We're going to talk about scientific evidence. One thing that amazes science students, when I taught biology, when you're looking at a microscope, these cells are not labeled. You know, I am the mitochondrion. You know, you do not see that. You look in there, half the class is going, I see one, Professor Moeller. Air bubbles under the slide, okay? I'm a scientist. You know? No, it's not that easy. We're going to look at the data, the straight on the laboratory bench data. Creationists are not afraid to look at that material. And I'm going to show you the secular reasoning. We got evolutionists jumping ship. Lynn Margolis, Massachusetts University or MIT, for full emeritus professor of biology, and I'll show you a quote in here, jumping ship. She says, that is just a religious statement. If we're a bunch of weirdo creationists, how come the evolutionists are starting to say the same thing? Okay, I'm not a pariah in the wilderness looking to boost my income here with a lecture. You know, we got a reason. Okay, here comes the ugly stuff. How many of you had biology in college yet? How many have had biology in high school? All right. Here comes the ugly ones. Now what I'm going to do is oh, it's wonderful. Here it is. Now this is out of a high school, advanced high school biology book, and I've taught college biology. This is a pretty good book. I'm not picking an easy target. This is what you're going to see. Here it is. Of all the major things of biology, which has never won a Nobel Prize, evolution is perhaps the best known but least understood. That's true, least understood. Most foisted upon the general public, but least scientists have concluded the great diversity of life is a result of more than a billion years of evolution. Okay, now, look down here where they want the meat. Variation. Now I'm going to show you, I got to show you the magic trick. These are really hokey, but I want to show you before we get started. See, you can only plan a speech so much, because in a normal scientific presentation, if I'm going to do one, the International Congress,
the enamelblastic rod, the enamelblastic component of the, have a noted change in the acetic acid, which,
you know, I can't do that, all right? So, I want to show you some stuff. We're going to talk about your thinking toolbox here. Now see, creationists, I'm being very lighthearted, you understand? I'm a very serious kind of guy. I can do that. But I just don't want you to confuse me trying to communicate information with the facts that I will not go one-on-one with some evolutionist guy that walks through that door, PhD, okay? Kind of like a nice dogfight. But I will do it. But right now, you're covenant kids, and I want to teach you something. Now, I'm going to make this cracker disappear. Do you all like magic? Now, what I'm going to do, I want you to, you got to participate here. If I'm starting to fudge, or you think I'm pulling something over on you, I want you to boo, you know, because evolutionists are going to do the same thing. And I'm going to show you here, it's a big magic trick. And I want to watch, be very careful. To make it disappear, I need to get a rag out of my pocket. Whoa! Let's do that again. I'm going to show you how to do these at home. The reason I'm showing you these, because the experiments that I'm going to show you do the same thing. You got to wake up. Okay, now, I'm sorry. Here we go. I'm going to make the cracker disappear. First, I need my magic cloth. Hey, now I take the magic cloth, okay, and I put it over my hand, and there it goes. Thank you. My next scientist, I'm on a roll, Pete, I love this crowd. I'm on a roll, look. I'm going to make this disappear, okay? Now, I got to stand back, watch this. Okay, you ready? I put it under there, and... All right, okay. I'll get one more, and this time I'm going to do it. No kidding. Keep your eye on the cracker. The joke is, microevolution leads to macroevolution. You understand? Little changes lead to big changes. Now, this is a great trick. I take a cracker. Watch, please, watch. I take my magic cloth, put the cracker under the cloth, and I sprinkle a little magic dust over... All right, now, those are tools in your toolbox. Let's go. Variation exists within the genes of every species. That's true. What did the Bible say? Kind, didn't it? Kind. In a particular environment, some individual species are better suited for survival and leave more offspring. That's true. Crackers coming out. Okay. Over time, change within the species leads to the replacement of old species. No, it's kind of change of the species, but kind of stretch it. Now, 4. There is clear evidence from fossils and many other sources that the species now on Earth have evolved from ancestor forms that are extinct. No. Where is the evidence? Yeah. Okay. Now, let's look at another one. You just got to understand, I want to develop your skills. That's right, correct. Let me get a better one. That means I don't know where I am here. Here's another one. Now, this is what you see. Look over here in the work of Charles Darwin. Can everybody see that? Evidence of macroevolution. Fossils provide evidence of macroevolution. Is that true? Absolutely not. Up to 1970, they taught gradualism. What happened in 1970? Punctuated equilibria such as Gould, Eldridge, and Stanley, Harvard, Gould, Eldridge, and Stanley, I believe, University of Chicago. Close enough, look them up. Point is, since there's no evidence for gradualism, it happened so fast, called punctuated equilibrium. Wait a minute, whoa, back the train up. You were teaching everybody it was gradual and you were sure of it from the fossil record. I'm going to show you quotes. that show you that's not true and it never has been. Molecules contain a record of macroevolution. Molecular biology, we're going to talk about that. No, they don't. They support what? The Bible, and they support creationism. Anatomy and development reflect evolution. Not today. Not if you got your head screwed on straight, they don't. Oh, evidence of microevolution. Now, here's what micro and evolution mean. I'm a sportscaster. Guy gets, hits, goes to first base. Well, Bob, we have a micro home run in progress. Well, that's funny. But look, industrial melanism is natural selection at work. Some guy in industrial Britain saw the species of moss change, different kinds and colors. And he says, look, proves evolution. The sorry thing is, this book is 1996, and they still have it in there. Sickle cell anemia reveals evidence of microevolution. No, it reveals evidence of a fallen world in which there is death and suffering. If you think, and I've had sickle cell patients in the hospital, if you think that's an evolutionary improvement, the problem is the PhDs that teach this trash don't have to come to the ICU. You understand? Here, come on, let's look at a genetic improvement tonight. Here it is at the bottom. Microevolution leads to macroevolution. That's just not true. We're going to show you why that's not true. What are the creationists saying? All right? This is a framework statement. Modern evolution. Over here you can see, can't do that. Getting everybody's way. Over here is my laser finger. Here's what evolutionists say. Spontaneous generation of life. Different things evolve. What do we say? Eternal God created plant kinds, created animal kinds. What does the fossil record show? We're going to show you that. I'm sure we'll get to it this morning. I'm going to show you open a textbook in biology, it will already tell you right in there by looking at these diagrams with the cracker tricks, shows you creation. Who puts the artificial lines in connecting them? The evolutionists. Why are they dotted lines? There's no evidence for them. Do you understand? You go, how? Next thing you're going to say, Dr. Mueller, who do you think killed Kennedy? You know, I'm not going there, okay? This is not going to be wrapped up in the same bag as that. All right. Here's one from a college textbook. We're going to look at proof of evolution. This is out of the one I used to speak about. Evidence for evolution. Now look, I'm not hiding anything. I already showed you I was not going to perform magic for you, and you believed it. Now, intermediate anatomical modifications. We're going to talk about that. What do they use up here? See up there? Oh, way at the top. I'm sorry, I got to laugh because this is so pathetic. The mud skipper water pouches and stubby thin legs are clear examples of refashioned gills. I guess the guys that wrote it didn't take embryology at graduate school, because that's just not true, and we're going to show you some stuff. The reason is it's difficult to talk to liberal arts majors is you haven't had embryology. I can't say, of course, the fourth aortic arch is in birds on the right, humans on the left, or vice versa, whatever. You understand? You don't know what I'm talking about, and that is not transmitting information. But it's not true. Fossil record. Series of fossils, the horse. George Gaylord Stebbins, big evolutionist, said he cringes every time he sees that because it's not true. Were the horses found in nice, neat little layers stacked up? No. We're going to show you how to use your thinking cap and evaluate that. Radioisotope dating. Depends on where you're starting, and the creationists have fossils and lava flows that were dated in 1895. They're supposed to be millions of years old. We're going to talk about that. Embryology and vestigial organs. That's right, sure. You know what those are, right? Yeah, we used to have, humans had a tail. Yeah, that's right. And you know, you look in there, and if they take an embryology, it's just a fat structure. I've seen, and it's very sad, children born with one eye. Are you trying to tell us that you used to have one eye? Do you understand? What's the flip side of the record of vestigial organs? Nascent organs. You know what nascent organs are? Things starting to be improved. Like, hey, Don, what's that big lump on your head? Well, glad you asked, because my grandkids are going to have sonar. Yeah. Well, you know, That's what they're saying by nascent organisms. I mean, nascent organs. This is, it's funny, and I'm making it funny. If I was in a scientific conference, I would say, please delineate for me, utilize less percent mutations, how in a random genome of 3.8 billion nucleotides, you can start in a genome with 97% unexpressed arrive from point A to B utilizing single mutations, and make sure you mention Haldane's dilemma with respect, you know, and you're going, you know, all right, well, that's how I'd ask an evolutionist. You understand? But you're not there, and I'm not here to show off. That's not true. Anyway, homologous structures, this is a joke, see? Homologous structures involve homologous genes. They don't exist. But besides that, it's a great theory. Molecular homology. These are scary things, aren't they? You're going to sit in front of a guy, you know, put my atheistic evolutionary face. These are nasty things. And you're going, I don't know, maybe the Bible isn't true. I'll tell you right now, you don't have to remember a thing I say, all this information. The Bible is true. It's the Word of God, period. Do not relent on that fact. You will embarrass yourself if you do. All right. I will now show you a great quote. Why does it get loud when I'm down like this? I don't know. Let's get some federal funding and find out. Okay. All right. You know, God made me this way. My dad is not like this. Okay. All right. This is listen, there's so many good books out there. There's so many good books. It's like rats leaving a ship. Okay. Lynn Margulis, distinguished university professor of biology at the University of Massachusetts. Listen, that lady is probably seriously smart. Okay. Highly respected for her theory of mitochondria energy source. She's technically, in the bacterial, she was working with the energy transfer between the outside and inside of the bacteria to generate electromotive force, which powers the flagellum we'll talk about. Brilliant scientist. I didn't pull the janitor out of MIT here, okay? Now, isn't this a great slide? We have to figure it out. Over here. See, I was trying to make this really upscale, but it didn't work. Lynn Margulis says that they tell you what they say and then black it out, right? Margulis says that history will ultimately judge neo-Darwinism. You can buy the book if you don't believe me. As a minor 20th century religious sect. Wait a minute. I'm looking for the word creationism in there. Wait a minute. Within the sprawling religious persuasion. Now, this lady doesn't go out and count flowers. This lady is doing big time, heavy research. Nobel laureate category, and look at her statement. Do you understand? I'm not up here alone. I don't have the intellect to do that. I ripped teeth out, and you saw what I did for Peter Hurst, okay? So, now, when this lady goes, she asks the molecular biologist, this is out of Michael Behe's book, The Black Box, Darwin's Black Box. She asks the molecular biologist, those guys are bright. They're not bean counters and earthworm diggers. In the audience, to name a single unambiguous example of the formation of new species by accumulation of mutations. Her challenge goes unmet. Uh-oh, big uh-oh. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? You're going to sit in biology class and you're going to hear, turn the crank, little junior professor or guy getting his master's degree, tell you stuff that the people at the top are going, no. And when they don't need to debate this clown right here, look what this lady is. Her challenge goes unmet. Neo-Darwinism, here's a good one, is in a complete funk. Now, I'm not misquoting. All right. Now, do you kind of get the idea of what we're dealing with? Okay. Now we're going to get to the heavier stuff, I guess. We'll talk about the old Earth later. Let's talk about, is life too complex to have arisen naturally? Now, I'm going to run through these in a few minutes. Don't try and memorize or read everything. I just want to show you what's going on. Is life too complex to have arisen naturally? What they're kind of doing is trying to answer very subtly creationist questions and try and convince you. And then I'm going to show you some stuff from Major. Here it is, the origin of life. Is the Earth old enough? Life too complex, spontaneous origin. We're going to talk about that. This is what you're going to see. Oh, there are several ideas about the origin of life. Proteins can be assembled by RNA. Microspheres might have led to cells. Yeah. If that cracker's going to lead to a 28-course dinner at the Hilton, yeah, that's right. All right. I mean, do you understand? Might, the fuzzy words. Okay. Proteins can be assembled by RNA. That's called RNA World. And the guy that did it down there, I forget his name, I have his book. There's a lot of theory. They haven't done it in a lab. Not only that, guys, excellent creationists have already, biochemists have already answered that, and we'll talk about that. Microspheres might have led to cells. You have to understand a little biochemistry. We're going to go through that. I'm going to bring these back up and show you the reasons. This is the kind of stuff you're going to see in your textbooks, okay? It's going to make you kind of sick. Oh, here's a great colored slide. Now, this one, reducing, non-reducing atmosphere. Here, down here, see, there it is, organic molecules, simple coacervates, complex coacervates. Cell! Hey! You know what it is? You know, it's like scrap of paper on the street in New York, gum wrapper, comic, MIT library. I mean, seriously. Oh, here's a great one. We're going to talk about the origin of life experiment. This is right out of the textbook. Right out of the textbook. Proposed the early atmosphere lacked oxygen. No. The reason it had to lack oxygen is because any biochemist knows if there is oxygen, close the lab, you're not going to get to first base. Okay? That's why they proposed methane. There's now plenty of evidence, and we're going to go through it, that there was oxygen in the early atmosphere. So when you see this little experiment, we're going to talk about that, and you put your thinking cap on. Here's another one. Look at that. There's the experiment that they do to prove life is formed, amino acids, microspheres. You say, well, Dr. Moeller, when are you going to start to get to the stuff that rebukes Buster's stuff or whatever? Okay, we're going to do that right now. Because people that listen to this tape are going to be waiting for information. I'm going to try and figure out if I'm on drugs, but now here's some heavy liberal arts, cover your eyes, okay? Chemical evolution of biomolecules from hydrocyanide. Now, amino acids, purines, porphyrins, polymers, these are incredibly complex things. We're going to talk about those, but right now we're not going to use these slides. Here's some more that scare you. See, I'm not afraid of putting equations up because I've got a couple chemical engineers in here. We'll go ahead and discuss these, and I brought them. I don't know who's going to be here. Okay, now let's talk about some stuff that's in print form, which won't scare the liberal arts people. Generally accepted. Now, this is called The Origin of Species Revisited. The guy that did this book, he's a lawyer. He was involved in the creation lawsuit down in Louisiana, Arkansas. I forget. Aguillard, I think, but it doesn't matter. This guy's a Yale lawyer, brilliant guy. He simply collects this stuff. Attorneys are incredible. They can generate paperwork like even the federal government can't imagine. So, this gentleman, Wendell Byrd, this is an excellent book, Origin of Species Revisited. It's in two volumes. It's generally accepted that the concentration of the soup was probably too small for efficient synthesis, okay, particularly polymers. Nissenbaum, Kenyon, Dean Kenyon, now a Christian, world-renowned biochemist. Now, this book is keyed. I'm not going to take your time to an incredible bibliography. This was submitted or could be submitted in evidence to a courtroom. You understand? So, what am I saying? Anytime there's a reference number there, copy it down, look it up. It will be out of a major scientific journal. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not doing any phony magic tricks for you here. We're not at the serious part of the lecture. Concentrations. Amino acids hopelessly low as starting material for the spontaneous generation of life. What is this? This guy Hull's a biochemist. It's probably in the journal Science, Biochemical Physica Acta. Do you understand what I'm saying? These are biochemists making these statements. Evaporating pools might solve the problem, but would magnify the radiation. Remember, when you form these proteins and these little evaporating pools, it's like laying on Virginia Beach, too much sun, now you're cooked. Do you understand? It's going to tear them apart. Decomposition problem, cross-reaction, the myth of the prebiotic soup. Do you see that right here? The myth of the prebiotic soup. What is the prebiotic soup? That's where they take that little flask, you saw that picture, bubble, bubble, boil in trouble, you know, okay. What is the point of that early experiment? It was suggested by Oparin back in like 1920s. In 1950-53, Miller and Urey, University of California, they finally ended up there. But at any rate, did this experiment. Now let's take that little flask and start to understand what they were doing with it. Now this is not to denigrate what they did. I'm simply going to show you errors that have come to light. Okay, here it is. These puppies are slick, so bear with me. Now, here we go. Now, this is the key experiment. Why? Because it's in all your books, and now I wanted to show you the biochemists and what they said about it. Now I'm going to go through so you can understand it. They took amino acids or precursors. What did they take? Look at the gases. That's methane, ammonium, water, and hydrogen. They put them in this apparatus and would spark it. And lo and behold, what did they get? Well, proteins. Great. Everybody went nuts. Looky here, we've created life. That's usually what it comes down to in the newspapers. We got some problems. Now take out your pencils because this is what you need to put down. Number one, what were the concentrations of these amino acids? Minimal, minuscule. Now, I have no problem with people teaching evolution in college. I think it's a great opportunity to witness. Because when you ask questions like this, I guarantee, unless you are at Harvard in biochemistry, the guy who did the research, if you ask these questions, and we're going to go over this and over this again, by the time we have 4 hours done, you will be hot dogs in this. What is the concentration of those? Question two. Question number two. What were the side products? I have a list to show you later. There's about 30 or 40. So of the 40 chemicals that were produced, maybe 6 or 8 were amino acids. But we got one other big problem. Everybody, if you brought them with you, take out your right hand and take out your left hand, please. If you got them with you, take them out. Okay. Now, all right. Pete, we're there. It's a Pentecostal service. All right. Now, you've got, this will help you, right and left hand. Molecules in your body are all what? Proteins, left-handed. Leave your left hand up, please. Ladies, watch your right hand. All right. Your left hand signifies what? A left-handed amino acid. That's, you can put your hands down. You have a question? Okay. Now, left-handed amino acids. What happens to a right-handed amino acid? It does not work. What are your sugars in your body? Right-handed. Left-handed sugars will not work. And we talked about DNA and that other kind of stuff. Let's talk about proteins. Left-handed proteins only. What did this experiment make? See your hands! Both. How do you get from both hands to we only need one? There is no, put this down, they're called racemates, R-A-C-E-M-A-T-E-S, racemates. Time goes so fast. I don't believe this. Okay. What, you were late. You owe me 5 minutes. You owe me 5 minutes. Racemates. You have to have right and left hand molecules in this experiment. There's no way to separate them. Question to your biology professor, how do you do that? And don't let them answer clays or crystals because it has not been shown to be effective or work. So there is no way. Now, let me talk about probabilities. You take 1 million marbles, 1 million red, 1 million black. You put them in a big barrel. You must pull out 200 red ones in a row. Actually, probably more than that. Do you understand the problem? One black one, start over. What are they called? Racemates, right and left hand. Do you understand? So, origin of life experiments. What's another problem? Big problem. There's biogenic amino acids and non-biogenic amino acids and proteins. kind of like I restore old Army Jeeps, okay? There are certain threads that you have, National Fine, National Course. You can give me a whole bucket of National Fine threads, that does not help me rebuild my Jeep. Do you understand? Wrong. Can't be used. Pitch it. Will all right-handed amino acids help? No. Do not be confused with their arguments. These are legitimate questions. Number two, what are the concentrations? Number three, non-biogenic amino acids. Amino acids that are just not meant to fit in the building structure of life. They don't fit. They cannot be used. Now, what happens if you don't supervise this little thing here? Who is watching that thing? Carefully. Biochemists. Okay? If it was a true origin of life experiment, what would they do? Turn it on, go down to the corner tavern, come back in about 2 or 3 years, right? What are they going to have? I'll tell you what they have. They have a black lump right down here of tar. That's the truth. Now, you are going to try and tell me to give up my faith in Christ, in the Bible, in the Word of God, because this thing is creating life. This thing is not creating anything but problems for the evolutionary community. Who said that? Lynn Margulis. Did anybody stand up and refute her? No. Now, you also have a trap. Why is the trap there? Because they will pull off the amino acids at a particular time. This is an experiment to prove life could not form spontaneously. Now, let me talk just briefly about scientific theory. Evolutionists say just because you've disproved evolution, you have not proved creation. Do you understand that? But let's reverse that. I can use evolutionary literature like this for one thing: the support that life couldn't have happened spontaneously. Do you see what I'm saying? Because as Christians, the firmament declares the glory of God, right? Creation declares the glory of God. If you're so smart, create life. We can't do it. And what did Satan want to do? Be like God. Have we created life? Have we? No. What does it take to make proteins? It takes enzymes. Enzymes make proteins. Enzymes are bigger proteins than the proteins they make. Which is more complex? The machinery to make these cheap Kmart reading glasses, the factory, or the glasses? The factory is more complex, isn't it? Now, the DNA has to code, and we're going to talk about these mathematical problems later, the DNA has to code for enzymes to make proteins. But to do that, you have to have so many bases in the DNA to code for the enzymes. Which came first, the enzyme or the protein? Do you see the problem the evolutionists have? You cannot just simply have proteins arising de novo, out of nothing. There are enzymes that regulate these processes to make them go, because this doesn't work. But remember, the proteins to code for the enzymes, the nucleic acids to program the enzymes are more complex than the enzymes themselves. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is not an easy thing. You just don't have proteins right and left hand bobbing around in the ocean. It's small concentrations. Does everybody understand what's going on? You need enzymes to make these. Well, if the enzymes are more complex than the first proteins, how do you get the enzymes? Which came first, the chicken or the enzyme? You understand? Now you understand. Okay. Let's look at some more stuff. All right. Here we go. This is summary of scientific issues. Produce nucleic acids, produce little else. These are all chemists. Experiments depend on the trap we have to imagine. Is this science? Folks, this is what they're skating over in your textbooks. Experiment synthesizing proteins have only scarce relevance to the prebiotic synthesis. Scarce resemblance. Non-biological peptide bonds. There's three types. I think alpha, beta, and gamma. I think we need alpha. I think these are also beta and gamma. In other words, the bonds are incorrect as well. Here it is. Mixture of D and L forms, although the purity of the L form is essential. Purity, 0% error. Experiments, look down here. Experiments proposing protocell models. Protocell, that's that coacervate. Microcells lead to the cell. Large gap from life. Kenyon Nissenbaum. Protocells are about as lifelike as soap bubbles and are notoriously unstable. Wooldridge did this research in the 70s on this. You bump it, there goes his experiment. Do you understand? Am I getting the sense that you people are appreciating this? How about Chaucer? One that era with April the suit. Ah, you're with me. Okay, anyway. As far as I know it. Okay. Look, this is the stuff you're being fed as covenant kids. Students, I'm sorry. I'm old. But this stuff you're being fed, and it's just simply not true. And I'm quoting secular people to show you this. Oh, here it is. The coacervate and proteinide microsphere models no longer can be considered meaningful in the context of origin of life on Earth. This is right out of their textbooks, okay? And yet, in the 1996, and it's going to happen in the year 2010, they're going to put the same stuff out. I'm going to keep going until I see someone collapse. Okay. Evolution of life, a jump of fantastic dimensions, and available facts do not provide a basis for postulating Green and Goldberg. Oh, that cells arose on this planet. Where is all this stuff in the textbooks? It's not there. While genetic mechanisms can exist only within living things, the organisms themselves could not have come into being without such advice. See, which came first? Enzyme, information. We're going to talk about information systems a little bit. Okay, biochemical evolution could not be affected by natural selection. To have natural selection, it's like once I get my little Lionel train on the track with 20 cars, I can switch people. No, I'm asking you how you made the Lionel train. You understand? Natural selection works in God's world after it gets everything working. Natural selection is, remember, micro home runs. Okay, no such animal. Pre-vital nucleic acids, here you go. Pure starting materials afford poor yields. This is what the big boys read, okay? Another 5 minutes and we'll be done. You'll be done, I'll be cooked, you'll be cooked. Okay, how about this? Cross-reaction problem. Oh, by the way now, if you want copies of these or want to get the book, we can arrange to do that. I'm thinking about, for the serious enthusiast, you can get copies, Xerox copies of these in a bound form. Cross-reaction problem includes reactions between amino acids and sugars. These things just don't lie in that little soup. Yeah, that little soup originally made what? Proteins, amino acids, right? Well, you've got to make nucleic acids in that same soup. It doesn't look like the kitchen at the Hilton where they're making pastries over here and spaghetti over there, you understand? It's all got to happen in the same pot. Amino acids and sugars, aldehydes and amines. Rapid formation, this insoluble polymeric material. Remember when I said lump of coal at the bottom? Okay, if you're going to fall asleep, the nurse is leaving. Watch your neck. Hold your neck. Hold your neck. The nurse is leaving. If you feel it, pass out coming on. Just don't. I knew I was waiting for you to leave here. Okay. See, doctors can spot when nurses leave the ward. It's a reflex. Okay. Ha ha, you'll never do that again. Okay. Radiation problem from ultraviolet light. What's that mean? These molecules are laying in the ocean getting a suntan, and they're getting ripped apart. You're making them, sun's ripping them apart. Uh-oh, bad news. The final difficulty is a dilution problem. Who here still believes that I'm telling a lie, that life could have formed, that there's any evidence for origin of life? Does anybody? Probably didn't when you walked in, but hey. And we can go on and on. I will be here through lunch hour doing this. I got hundreds of these babies. Okay. No evidence, but much against. Primitive oxygen-free methane. Okay, here we go. Ultraviolet light would have split water vapor into oxygen. That's what it does. They said, well, how could there have been early oxygen there? I'll tell you real easy. Photodissociation. The light hitting the ocean causes water to dissociate, H2O, hydrogen this way, oxygen this way, and now you're cooking biochemicals. Stop him! I just want to show you. I'm going to even quit reading these now. I just want to show you. Here it is, left-handed amino acids. See, I'm not lying to you. I just want to show you the massive information. You know, in some lecture, I'll hear the seeds flopping up. Professor gets this. We only got about 50 more here. Okay. All right, evolution of lipids. Here's another one. The cell membrane. Evolution of lipids, there are cis and trans forms. When you have phospholipids, you have to have 3 acetic acids. And you have to dock them next to a glycerol molecule. Not only that, you've got to have double bonds at a certain place so they'll fit. The cell membrane involves lipid synthesis. Now, look up here. Evolution of lipids involves such a complex chain of biochemical reactions that no satisfactory synthesis of fatty acids is presently available. Cis and transformations. All this is good stuff, especially when you ask your professor, excuse me, how did the cis and trans form start? I'm serious. I had a guy so angry in one organic evolution lecture, he slammed his book and walked out of class 1/2 hour early. You're probably wondering, what was that question, right? Okay, now, here it is. Karin Smith, big hitter in biochemistry, who calls evolution of gene protein like that is shrouded in almost complete mystery. Now, you write an order that I want a pair of these glasses made to a factory. Lots happened. Factory already exists. Some guy has to read and punch it into some very sophisticated optical machinery. Do you understand? How did that link get started? Remember, the embryo, which we're going to talk about, is a living factory where, to make your fingers, it's called apoptosis, cellular death. Your fingers are being made, and this area in here is being disintegrated. You are a living factory. God has made it so there is actually no leftover waste. Do you understand? You are being formed in utero, such an incredibly complex process. How did that transition from DNA telling proteins to make something? There's a, what do you call that? A complete mystery. Yeah. Okay, cover your eyes. Cover your eyes. This is the bad stuff. Okay, here's the one I was looking for and I thought I lost. This is so cool. Now, this is for the geek. Let me go over to the geek platform. I'll show you. I'll do it semi-geek. The proline productivity, as you can see, is equal molar as the yield is less than 1/1,000. Of course, we know. You understand? Now look, see the alanine, glycine up there? How many essential amino acids are there? 20. How many do they got? Alanine, glycine, what's in there? It's like a party that you invited some real roughnecks to. You understand? These guys are not going to help out. They're going to wreck your furniture and take your lunch. All right. Valine, leucine, glutamic acid, those are the people you invited. Look at the Hell's Angels that arrived. Look! And you're supposed to have a wedding reception with these people here? No. Okay, look, norvaline, sarcosine, those are not useful amino acids. What happens to those? A little ethereal janitor come in and clean up the primordial soup? Not in your mind. Okay, I think you've been beat up enough, but I do have a couple more slides. And just a summary slide. Oh, I love this. Get him off. Okay. You know, where's the nurse? She's here. She didn't leave. See, you embarrass somebody, they won't leave. I have a schedule here, and I'll tell you when you're going to get sick call. Okay, this is a summary. All right, I hope that you understand that when you intimidate or attempt to intimidate or impugn God's word, you're up against a real big immovable object, okay? You really need to understand that. You don't ever back up on the Bible. It's been around for thousands of years, and it's not going away tomorrow, and this is no threat to your faith. All righty, that's it.